There has been recent success of mantyhose.
Mm-hmm.
Men's tights can also be referred to as guylons or brosery.
Oh, gosh. That's horrible.
Brosery.
Welcome to Hey You Know It. My name is Jaquetta Sotmari, and I'm here with my co-host,
Katie Kazmir. Hey You Know It is a podcast that tells you how it is or how it should be.
You can listen to Hey You Know It on iTunes, a new episode every Monday.
And here they are, Jaquetta and Katie.
So we're excited today to have Evan Karanakis in the Hey You Know It studio with us. Evan, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, as you can tell from the blatantly obvious accent, I'm from Australia, but I've been here in the US for about 7 years now.
Mm-hmm. And legally, people.
Legally, yes. Yeah. My mother's originally from Boston, so I have the benefit of the passport. So
cool, nice.
Even though I grew up in Australia, whenever I would land in LA, they'd obscurely say, "Welcome home, sir."
I don't like that because sometimes I'm not happy to get back.
Yeah.
But I write for a living. I mean, I've been writing pretty much full time since 2003 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, do all those things that we do to pay the bills, freelancing and so on. But a lot of journalism, but a lot of script writing and working on a novel at the moment. But
nice.
My background before that was looking after bands. And that was my first book was a sort of a collection of stories gone wrong of rock bands.
Which so is what is your book and is it still available now?
Unfortunately, it's now out of print. It was a small book. It was called Sex, Drugs and Mum in the Front Row.
Nice.
And it was, when we ran a little music company called Reverb Music, my business partner and I, Bob Trigg, and it was pretty sort of low budget surrounds. You know, we had two desks facing each other. We shared with two other businesses, and the only way through the office between those desks led to the toilet.
So, Hey You Know It style.
Yeah.
Right. So we shared it, though, with a guy who ended up becoming a bit of a mentor to us, a very old rock manager who'd been around for years and years. But he was so entertaining because even though he'd normally be drunk by about 11 in the morning,
that's rock and roll,
he'd also have to keep going to the gents, and he'd always pause and feel awkward and want to make conversations. So he'd say something like, "Did I ever tell you guys about the time I took acid with Iggy Pop in 1976? No. And he'd tell us these stories. And we ended up having gigs where, again, you just started accumulating more and more stories. And so I had always wanted to write, and I had been doing a bit of journalism, but I had the opportunity to put all of these experiences together in one book. And that was when I sort of took the leap to decide to try and do this full time. And so far,
cool.
Getting by.
So in addition to this, you also have a website that sells skate decks. Is that correct?
Right. So when I was living in Maine for a few years before I moved to New York. And while I was up there, I was painting. And I had always been...
It's a renaissance man here, people.
Yeah.
But I was always an avid skater, but I hadn't skated in years because I've broken both my ankles too many times.
Skating?
Absolutely.
I knew it was dangerous.
But,
I was not a Betty.
In any event, a kid one day who I'd sold a painting to asked if I could replicate as best as I could that painting on a skateboard. And I said to him, I had no problem, I'd have a crack at it, but that it was oil and acrylic and not to write it, it was for display only.
Mm-hmm.
And about 3 months later, I got an email from a guy who was at a skate park in Brooklyn and said... he'd seen a skateboard he really liked. He approached the guy to ask for information, and this young kid said, "Dude, there's a Aussie who's a writer who lives in Maine that paints decks. I'll put you in touch with him."
And the business was born?
And the business was born. That man ended up being a collector of skate art, and it's called Devil Street Decks. And, since then, we've now got 11 artists on board and designers.
Yeah, you can devilstreetdecks.com. You can find them. And you also write for two online music magazines.
Right. One's a music magazine called Gas Can Mag.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other is called The Cud, which is actually, I think, turns nine this year.
As in Chewing
the Cud, yes.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, that's thecud.com.au.
Right. And we got new issues out every month for that. And
cool.
Different sort of music reviews and odds and ends.
So we're talking about worst gig stories. Evan, first of all, why don't you tell us, I know Evan from work as a mild-mannered copywriter.
Right.
I found out recently that he used to be a hardcore rapper or a hip-hopper.
Oh, well, I was in a parody band called Don Lane and the Coffee Tables.
Called what?
Don Lane and the Coffee Tables.
Okay, who's Don Lane for those of us who are not Australian?
So Don Lane is he's a now late American entertainer who moved to Australia in the 60s and 70s.
I was going to say, never
heard
of him.
How dare he?
He
wasn't popular.
He had some sort of contemporary connection, though, to Sinatra, or I think he and Sammy Davis Jr. were very good friends. So he was kind of that kind
in
of
the Rat Pack.
Right. It had nothing at all to do with hip-hop. Where we got the name from is that there was an urban legend about him.
Tales from Durkheim.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And it's not a very nice one, so I apologize to Don Lane. But the story was that in the 70s he had apparently hired Asian ladies to
Asian ladies
put on clear glass coffee tables while he lay underneath and
play, okay, so he was in the scat, is what you're saying.
Yeah, okay. That's right. Yeah, all right. That's also the rumor about Sylvester Stallone too.
And also Alfred Hitchcock.
Oh, I feel allegedly. So much better that there's other stories out there.
Right? Yeah, there's a long history of celebrities in the
scat. Yeah, we all have our glass table poop on.
Okay, great. Yeah. So we decided to name our band after him. Don Lane and the Coffee Tables. And
classy.
So and the whole premise of it was that we were ex-private school prefects who were convinced that we were African-American gangster rappers. So the whole stage performance was that we would come
out. It's not so far from the truth for a lot of people.
Which is exactly what we were sort of trying to have an angle at, because there's plenty of those kids. So anyway, that was that. And we would do sort of covers of NWA and Public Enemy and things like that.
And nice. Did people think that you guys were a real rap band, or did they understand that it was a parody? Because when were you doing this?
Oh, probably like 98 to 2000.
So it was like Spinal Tap.
Yeah.
It was like a hip-hop Spinal Tap. That's right. And we would say things like, you know, don't drink and drive, or drink and drive by, you know. Anyway, but 98% of the crowd always were certain that it was a parody.
Those 2%.
That 2% though, because
those motherfuckers were hardcore.
That's
son.
Right. Yeah. In fact, we had one show where
we can do it too.
There was a guy in the crowd who was being really animated throughout most of the gig and just charging to the front and just giving us gang signs and everything. And we were actually looking at each other a bit nervously, like, what's this guy doing?
I wouldn't even know what a gang sign was if someone gave me one.
Right, just lots of twisted fingers.
Yeah, I've seen gang signs before, and it just looks like Cat's Cradle without a string.
Oh, you know, so you're
making a letter. What you did was kind of like a Tyrannosaurus thing. Yeah, that could possibly be a gang signal
it
as
might
well.
Be, right.
Like so people throw up stuff.
So like in baseball, when they have, when the pitcher throws them to the catcher and says, this is, and they do that back and forth. That's the same kind of thing.
Sure, sure.
And in my mind, there are a lot of things that gangs do that make them seem really silly, but having a little symbol that you do with your hands.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that's real hard.
Right.
You
know, Dr. Spock does that, right?
Yeah, it's real hard. Like the girls do it when you see each other. Like, hey.
Yeah. But the difference with this kid was that being the goose that he was, at one point he sort of ran up to the stage after having been absent for a few songs. And he was sort of doing this flicking thing with his fingers and sort of just spreading his hands around in the air. And we had no idea what he was doing. And after the show, he came up and enthusiastically thanked us and said, that was the greatest show I've ever seen. You guys are amazing. Which part of the U.S. are you from? And the rest of it. But then he said...
Oh, so you were pretending to be from the United States?
Oh, completely.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Even better.
On
even
top better. Of. So nothing you were doing...
Everything was in accents.
Everything was BS.
Absolutely. We used to have fake gold records presented to us on stage in the middle of the show.
So the blackness, the Americanness, nothing was real.
Right. And the awards.
We were the whole thing was that there are rumors out there that we're ex-private school prefects from the North Shore of Sydney, but that's all rumor. Anyway, but this
were
guy...
Were there hoes? Real or imagined?
No, only at the Christmas show we referred to the ho 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 gag, which didn't really go down all that well. But the show typically opened with us in an electric chair, being brought back to life by a guitar.
That's very rap.
We had been convicted for rhymes against humanity.
I like it.
And but in any event, this guy was so upset with us because he kept saying, you know, you didn't show me the respect, though. I showed you the respect. You didn't show me the respect. And he went on to explain that flicking thing that I'd seen him been doing in the front row was he'd gotten a bag of weed and started sort of just pinching it off and throwing it on stage.
Really?
Which prompted one of the guys in our band to say, is he saying there's weed on the stage right now? I'll be right back.
I don't know much about rap music.
I've never heard of someone
doing that. I don't know about flinging small buds weed on the stage.
I've never heard of that.
That doesn't even make sense.
And how are you supposed to respect him afterwards?
Were you supposed to get on your hands and knees and gather it up like a crackhead?
Well, he was very upset because, of course, we started talking to him in an Australian accent after that. So he was assuming that we were, you know, these hardcore. So he started getting disappointed. And then...
Was he Australian?
Yeah, he was.
Was he embarrassed?
He was a bit unhinged is what he was. He invited us to go back to his house for a party.
Well, he was throwing away good weed, first of all.
Oh.
Yeah, he was quite the goose. But
he invited you to go back to his place for a party?
Yeah, let's go back.
After you dissed him? As it were.
Well, apparently, I don't know. It was a long night.
I like it.
He was going to rob you. That's what he was going to do.
When you guys were doing these concerts, like what kind of venue? Were these like big
They were pub rock venues, which is sort of, you know, in Sydney and Melbourne, like the music scene there for years has always thrived on these sort of pub rock venues that would be maybe sort of 200 to 600 capacity. Our Christmas shows, we would normally tag them on. We would tag our band on at the start of the night as a bit of a joke alongside the actual legitimate bands that we were. It was just a bit
of an opening act kind of thing.
Right,
that's
right.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. I like it.
But we had 600 people or so do a couple of those shows. It was quite fun. Yeah. It was left field. But the funny thing was that most of the American friends that we had that went along all said to us that there was pretty much no way we could pull that off in the US in terms of it would probably get
people would know right away.
Pushing too far from the parody or the, you know.
It would have to be like total, like it would have to be known that it was and let you just have the show.
But we were always proud of the fact that at least by virtue of the name, we managed to get the stub, the Wikipedia bio of Don Lane ended up having a mention of his urban legend.
Awesome.
A band bears his name.
So we have an internet.
Really? Oh, that's cool.
History celebrity here, people, right in the studio. And hey, you know, you heard it here first. So what is the, we're talking about bad gigs. I'll share my bad gig story. I used to do stand-up comedy. And I kind of didn't do a lot of black shows because they were less organized. I know it's not PC to say, but I found that the black producers were just super janky. So one time I was like, you know what? I'm not going to be a bigot against my own people. I'm going to do this black show. So I get to the show and there's a blind gentleman there going in with a producer. And I'm like, oh, seemed like a nice guy, whatever. I find out he's doing the sound and the lights. So I'm talking to a friend of mine, Akinos, and I turn to her and I'm like, hey, that brother's doing the lights. She's like, man, go fuck. You know what I mean? She thought I was like joking.
Right, right.
I'm like, no, I'm not joking. This guy's really going to do the sound. He's really going to do the lights. He's completely blind. Like, not just hard of seeing, like, just he can't see anything at all. So I'm waiting for the show. The show's supposed to start at 8. It doesn't. It starts at like 9:30. We're all sitting around at this point, just like waiting and waiting. The first guy goes on, and he's just a really good comic. He's like a hardworking guy. He's doing his act. He's being real professional. All of a sudden, the sound goes off. And I'm like, okay, I understand you're blind, but like the sound, like you can probably take care of that. So the guy's like, you know what? This happens all the time. He's very professional. He keeps going. He's doing his thing. He's like, you guys can still hear me. Then the lights go off. And at this point, the guy was just like, are you kidding? Like, he's like, you can't see me. You can barely hear me. I'm just going to leave.
It's like.
So they fix it. My friend Akinos, who does burlesque, during her number. So she's coming out on stage to do a really sexy and elaborate strip. You know, she's taken in 45 minutes to get into her costume. Everything's going well. So she gets out there. She's ready to do the big reveal. Music goes off.
Oh, geez.
She has to put her clothes back on, walk off stage, and then wait for the guy to put it together. And, you know, I'm all for American Disabilities Rights and all that kind of stuff, but that's something you just can't do.
No, you can't.
I feel like at the last minute, someone was like, yo, can you do this? And the guy was like, if you're going to ask me, I'm going to say yes.
Yeah,
this is the worst gig ever.
Maybe he was grandfathered in on union rules or something.
So by midnight, I was still waiting to go on. The show was supposed to start at 8. I hadn't gone on. I was like, you know what? I'm leaving. It was the only time in my life I've ever left. It was the worst gig. Every time someone got on stage, it was like, no, when someone gets on stage, turn the lights on.
Oh, my
God.
Don't turn the lights off.
It was terrible.
Well, this is what happens when you have these gigs at these places.
Yeah.
It's not like when it's not your regular thing. Years ago when I was in, I lived in Aspen and I was in a comedy group and we did sketch and improv and we had a regular theater we went to and it was like, it was a bar, but it had a stage. So it was a normal place to perform.
Mm-hmm.
One night, this is kind of a two-part thing. One night they canceled on us. They said, you can't come in because we have, a special high profile actor singer who is with his
model waitress
who is with his band, so you can't perform.
Okay. So, were you guys at the house entertainment?
We always had that Wednesday night. We always performed on that Wednesday.
Oh, that sucks. You have one night a week.
They said no because we've got somebody else coming in. So first part of this is guess the actor singer who performed with his band that took our spot.
Eric Stoltz.
No, I'll give you a choice.
Please not Russell Crowe.
It was either Kevin Bacon.
Oh no.
Bruce Willis.
Oh no.
Or Lou Diamond Phillips. Which one?
Lou Diamond Phillips?
I'll go with Bruce.
Lou Diamond Phillips.
Who wants to see Lou Diamond Phillips?
That's
period?
Right. That's right. So we went to another, we got another place, and it was a sports bar.
You guys like, screw this. We're taking this gig on the road. We
right,
don't need
let's
you.
Go.
Other than the La Bamba soundtrack.
That was
well,
like, I guess at around that time, basically. And right. So afterwards, he was inspired to do his own.
But I imagine that people showed up to see improv, and they're like, this improv is terrible. Who is this right. guy?
He's extending the performance past yeah. the film. It's amazing.
Like, it's kind of bad, but not in a good way. what kind of material was he doing?
It was I wasn't there. We
folk?
Left. He was singing with a band. He wanted to be like a singer. That's he was.
See, because he was
thing.
In that movie.
Yeah,
he
exactly.
You
get
it.
Like, he got a taste. He got a taste of the rock and roll lifestyle.
The shame is that he wasn't doing the singing in the movie.
No, he was listening.
He
probably should have done that as
yeah.
well. So anyway, so you guys,
we went to
that popsicle stand.
Yeah, went to a sports bar. They said, sure, you can perform, but there's no stage. So they put a bunch of tables together.
And piece sports.
A piece of plywood over the table, so it was like a stage.
A death trap, basically.
And you had to, like, get on a chair and then get on the table and, you know, jump off and on for your scenes and your improv, right? And none of these guys want to see us, and I don't blame them. They were there for the sports and the beer, not for... like, listen to the people on the
but
table.
But here's the question. The proprietor or proprietress of this place was like, no, this is fine.
Yeah.
Like, they'll be into this.
I'm
sure.
looking forward
sure.
to having a riot in the middle of the football game.
Yes.
Let's have improv.
Right. So,
did you get suggestions?
Well, yeah, we did, but my...
Was the suggestions like, get the fuck out of the way?
You know, I think they were polite, and then they were like, you know, this is just too... This is not what we're here for.
Do you have a script? What's going on?
I was on stage doing improv with my scene partner, this guy, and we were in the middle of this... you know, make them up scene. And
yes, and
two guys, this guy in the front row really started heckling us, going eh, and mimicking everything we were saying, but he was really drunk. So he was like drunkenly
was
repeating what we were doing and then going and like laughing after each other.
Which is actually an exercise in improv if you study long enough at UCB.
And he kept doing it and it was just... And,
what did you guys do?
Well, this is what happened. My scene partner, who was also a black belt in Taekwondo.
Okay.
Jumped down off the table, grabbed the guy by the and shoved and threw him outside.
Literally?
Wow.
Literally bounced him out of there while I was standing on the table and everyone left.
You know what? The only thing missing is saloon doors.
Yeah, really, basically.
Like you should have slid down the bar
it
first.
It was like that. It really was like do 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 and out the doors. And
to
I was on the table and I'm like, home. Oh,
alone.
Oh, alone. And like a pro. You know what I did? I stared.
It's early Katie.
Yeah.
You froze like yeah. a deer in the headlights.
But nobody was watching me.
You know
they
what?
Were watching this guy getting
you
thrown out.
You gave them what they probably, those guys are probably still talking about that improv. They're like, I fucking love improv. In the middle of the scene, this guy just picked up someone and threw him the fuck
it
out.
It was violence.
Yeah. Like, and it was all improv. Like,
that's
we didn't know what was going to happen.
Then he got back up on the table. My scene partner refinished and continued.
Did you just go right back into the scene?
Absolutely.
That is
oh,
awesome.
Wow.
So tell us about your worst gig experience, or was that the
no?
That,
oh
like,
no,
loop
there's
it
been
back
some.
And cut it in.
There's been some good ones. I mean, one. I'll give you two very quickly. One at the absolute lower end in terms of a young band just starting out,
mm-hmm.
and the other of a very successful band who went on to be well known in Australia. But their first show. So
is this the same band?
No.
Okay.
They're two separate. So one's called Appleseed, who was a band that we used to look after, and one of the first shows that we ever got for them was to play at a kid's 21st.
Oh.
So you were the producer.
I was managing them.
Okay.
Right.
Now is 21 the drinking age? And
no, it's 18.
So
I think it's like 12 in Australia. Let's
so
right.
what's
people.
The significance of 21 then? Not nothing.
It's some weird hangover from England. I think maybe they.
It's the same thing. Reason for us. It's a British thing.
Yeah, I think.
But we're of age. Like
remember
you can
when
drink.
We were really young though. 18 was the drinking age.
Yeah.
For some reason, it's hung around though as a big celebrated bash, and so it was actually quite a wealthy family on the lower north shore of Sydney, and they'd hired us. And we were looking forward to it. It was like 400 guests, and it was going to be a big opportunity for this band to play. They set up a big marquee. It was
yeah.
quite a mansion of a home.
Wow, that's
and
fancy.
The but when we there. Got there, the father was in a flurry. Like, he was really agitated. Obviously, a few things had gone wrong. He was busy setting up this whole event. So when we just went up to him and politely introduced ourselves and said, hi, this is Appleseed. We're here to do the show. He just started swearing at us, like, and said, I don't care what your effing name is. Head over there. Just set up. Do what you got to do. And do
play
the show.
Some music.
And if you're lucky, you'll get paid at the end of the night.
If you're lucky?
Right. So I had a slight chat to him.
Because we'd stay there. If it was a hey, you know, again, we'd be like, well, maybe we will get paid.
Well, the truth is we were thinking this is the first gig we'll ever have for 400 people. Let's just hang around and see how it goes. So we got there to set up on the stage, but there were no available outlets for any of the amps and equipment.
Was this the black show?
No, but what we did see, though, were all these cords that were trailing through the marquee and then disappeared off somewhere behind the house.
To someone else's.
But they were all plugged in.
Okay. Yeah, to someone else's.
We didn't
else's
know what
house.
To, but we thought, well, we should ask him. But then we saw him, he was cursing out a waiter or something. So, all right.
That's this guy's MO. He just goes
around
cursing.
He was just furious the whole day. I mean, it was meant to be this joyous celebration. He was just cursing it.
Well, I wonder what he paid for. He had a midlife crisis and was like, I remember when I was 21, I didn't get this.
Yeah, I didn't get this.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got smacked in the face and told to enjoy it.
I mean, this would have been a $20,000 affair. I mean, it was ridiculous.
He was probably pissed.
Right, oh, my God.
Right.
Yeah.
But they had a lot of BMWs in the driver. I'm sure it was fine.
Still, you know.
But
you
still,
are.
It's the whole thing, like father, son. Oh, it's that whole thing. Like, he's a man now and he's going to really show me how it's done.
Right.
And I don't like that.
Well, in the end, in any event,
really?
Where's my youth gone?
He gets inside of imaginary characters and brings out the worst. Yeah.
He was bitter. I'll definitely give him that. But in any event, too scared to ask him for advice, we just said to each other, okay, just don't worry about it. Just unplug those things and put in our equipment and it'll be fine.
The dialysis machine.
Right.
Just unplug that
one. So you guys have no idea what you were unplugging?
No, and we should have thought about it more deeply, but the guy was quite scary, to be fair. So,
he did bring it on himself. Mm-hmm.
So we put the show on, and it was great. The kids loved it. It was wonderful. Mm-hmm. And then
it was like the Super Bowl.
It was great fun. The band played a great show. It was really good. For us, it was the Super Bowl. Right, right. But then about 15 minutes after we got off stage, when all the 400 guests were about to be then diverted into the next marquee for their dinner, we heard this blood-curdling scream, and it was the father. And it turns out
he's screaming like a bitch.
Right. He really was though. He's like, ah, motherfucker. And the thing that we had unplugged, unfortunately, were the 8 rotisseries that had been cooking roast pork.
You knew that was coming, ladies and gentlemen.
For the party.
Which
had
meat.
Now been
pork
on one side completely white, milky raw, and on the other side scorched beyond belief. So
salmonella.
We had absolutely destroyed all of the main course.
Trichinosis.
So he started swearing at us, and of course, while he's screaming at us, we're packing up our guitar cases. And
was it like a lady, or did he go back to his gentlemanly?
Oh, he was ferocious. Yeah, he was just berating us and saying, "You'll never work in this town again." Well, what are you talking about? You're
on.
A lawyer. You're not.
You'll never.
Work.
You guys just started
work. Lawyers always yell too.
Yeah, they most definitely do. They think someone's listening. No one cares.
So that was a pretty forgettable show, but quite memorable as well for all of that.
I like that there's uncooked pork in the story.
Yeah.
The threat of food poisoning brings the story alive.
Yeah.
But so that was a band that didn't quite go on to make it. Then there's this other band though called the Celibate Rifles, who if everyone...
No, the Celibate Rifles?
Called the Celibate Rifles. Now
Celibate.
Celibate.
Yes, they're not having it off.
Right.
Okay.
But they're loaded.
Now they're actually considered quite an iconic Aussie punk act. And
okay.
And they're well known. They're considered the grandfathers of Australian punk. But it's wonderful to know that
the grandfathers of punk just doesn't sound.
Yeah. Doesn't quite. Well,
it's
yeah,
primal.
It's not as quite cool anymore,
yeah.
Is it? When you are at that age. But in any event, one of their first shows was at like a 400, 500 seat venue,
mm-hmm.
And only 4 people appeared.
It sounds like one of my shows.
Oh,
like,
my God.
But they figured, look, we've just got to keep going and do the best we can. But they were all in the last row. After their third song, 3 people had left, except for the one guy who was, but apparently just rocking out because the whole show, he's just bobbing back and forth. He's really into it.
Oh, no.
And they're just thinking, well, you know, this guy, he's one fan's better than none, right? And so when they took their break, the lead singer thought he'd walk down there just to say thanks to the guy for sticking it out. Like, what a legend. And unfortunately, as he started getting closer, he realized the guy was actually still sort of bobbing back and forth and still moving, even though there was now no music on. And it wasn't until he got a lot closer that he realized, and this is true, folks, that he was in a wheelchair, but he had 2 flat tires that had punctured, and he had been literally struggling, stuck, to get his wheelchair out of there. He'd been trying to get out of there for an hour.
He needed the music. I like the idea that he came with those other 3 people, and they were like, fuck it, Ron,
we're out of here.
If you don't want to leave right now, you're not leaving. Or worse,
no.
They punctured his tires, and were like, deal with it.
That'd be
the
punk thing, perhaps. Right, right.
To his car.
That's hardcore.
He said it was the most deflating sort of rock experience he'd had up to that point. He's like, he wasn't really even a fan.
I like that. I once played a show, or even called a show. It was 4 people in like a dinner theater place. And it was 4 Republicans from Texas and me doing my shtick.
Yeah.
And I get up there and I was like, how are you guys doing? And they weren't with it, but I got them. And it was one of my best shows ever. Only those 4 guys saw it. But it was amazing. Like, there's something to, like, yeah, there was 1 person there. And even though that guy was trying to get the hell out of there, he still gave the band what they needed to continue
performing. Oh, absolutely.
That's nice.
Did they wheel him out?
I think,
I wouldn't have.
I think he actually walked away. He was just so mortified by, oh, gosh.
No. He regained the use of his legs.
But I do remember he said that they, once he broke the news to the band, they weren't as spirited in the second half of the set, you know.
Oh, so, no.
He's just stuck.
I wouldn't have let him go. Yeah, I wouldn't have let him go. I would have been like, sorry.
Right, we need one fan.
He needs a toe, that's
right.
All.
Yeah, phone a friend. It's not my problem. You got here. You get yourself out. That is awesome.
Oh, Don Lane and the Coffee Tables.
Okay.
Excuse me.
Well, who were you in that? What was your rap name? How was your?
Oh, I was Eazy-E.
Okay. Naturally,
Eazy-E.
My name being Evan, I guess it was just a bit easier for them.
So you were rapping. Did you play anything?
No, not at all. I pretty much just we had
did
like
you rap
ridiculous
not, they
props.
They don't play anything.
Well,
we had guns and
music.
Chainsaws and knives. We had lots of props.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
But they were. Like, part of, again, the shtick was that everything was meant to not look quite that good. So the electric chairs I was talking about were actually...
Just chairs.
You know, they were colanders wrapped in aluminium foil and folded.
Oh, nice.
Chairs right. So it was deliberately meant to be pretty rubbish. But, yeah, it was fun while it lasted. But
it sounds
it was pretty
awesome.
Ridiculous. Yeah.
I like the idea that you guys fooled a few people.
Oh, yeah. Well, we also, when we used to advertise in the sort of music trade papers for the tour, it would always say in brackets underneath, as was the convention, USA. So that people would know this band was touring from overseas.
And will that get people in Australia to come out simply because the band's from the US?
Oh, absolutely. If they think it's a touring band. And
that's interesting. I don't think that the reverse is true.
Certainly not in a city like New York, I wouldn't have thought.
Yeah.
Because it's Wednesday.
I don't know. The only thing I know about Australia in terms of the music was the guys that were doing the protest rock against the mines.
Oh, Midnight Oil.
Midnight Oil.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
It. I think I bought that cassette tape. And I also, for some
reason... You think about that cassette tape.
Yeah, the cassette tape.
I think about that cassette tape, too.
I also bought a cassette tape of Yahoo Sirius.
Oh, wow. There's a name I haven't heard in a while.
This is kind of like an Australian Carrot Top, but humorous.
Yeah, I know. Who.
You know who Yahoo Sirius is?
Yeah.
Most people, when I mention that, they have no idea what I'm talking about. I
haven't heard much from him in a while, though. Yeah.
He's like, our Weird Al.
Yeah, but he was much better looking, I thought. He made a film.
Yeah,
that was okay.
Yeah, it was quite
Young
popular.
Einstein?
Says you.
You're into, I mean, I love Weird Al. Weird Al was actually the first cassette I ever bought.
Is that
it
right?
It was Weird Al, Nature Trail of Hell in 3D. I remember some of the songs that were on there.
Uh-huh.
I Lost on Jeopardy.
Like
a bunch
yeah,
of
right.
early, I think, early parody songs.
I had posters for, I probably should be sharing this, but for certain bands on my wall when I was a kid that I thought were just a really cool pop band and didn't realize until years later that the band Dead or Alive that, anyway, there were various.
Yeah, I love Dead or Alive.
Yeah,
I did.
Right.
No idea.
It's Kiss. That's the other band.
Right, okay.
They're Australian as well, right?
Kiss?
Are they not Australian?
No.
None of them? Not even the Catman?
Detroit Rock City? No,
Quetta. You should be ashamed of yourself.
I think Kiss was Australian.
Maybe In Excess? Men at Work?
These are Australian bands?
Yeah, they're all Aussie bands.
Nice. I didn't know that. I really thought one, at least.
How dare you?
The Catman?
Everyone in Michigan just got very offended by them.
Oh, boy.
We live to offend Michigan.
Well, listeners, I knew.
You knew. Mm. Were you big into Kiss?
I loved Kiss, yeah.
I remember seeing them. I liked them and Alice Cooper when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't realize that Alice Cooper was creepy as a child. I just thought, oh, cool, fun, a clown.
Right,
yeah.
Right, with snakes. Yep.
The kind of clown I like.
Right.
So. All right, so shall we do some segments?
Sure.
What
do
you
got?
You go for it.
Well, this is not necessary. Well,
don't
this is kind
it's
of like
awesome.
A, this is awesome. This is kind of like a Hey You Didn't Know It.
Okay. Hey You Didn't Know It is a segment we do where we find news of the oblivious living among us, and we shout that news out and let them know that they don't know what's going on. Hence, Hey You Know It. So Katie's got something here.
Yeah, I've got
it. It's quite interesting.
It's from CNN. And
okay, so you know it's real.
Yeah. And the article is Don't Clone a Neanderthal Baby.
I heard about
this. By Arthur Kaplan.
See, it's like kind of they're doing a Jurassic Park, but with a Neanderthal.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, what they did, they there was a scientist who was thinking about saying, you know, we have the DNA for a Neanderthal, so we can.
So naturally, you should make one.
Right.
Right.
Despite a lot of frenzied attention to the intentionally provocative suggestion by a renowned Harvard scientist that the new genetic technology makes it possible to splice together a complete set of Neanderthal genes,
mm-hmm.
find an adventurous surrogate mother.
See, there's, a poor surrogate mother is what you need.
Yeah. And use cloning to gin up a Neanderthal baby.
Did he say gin up?
Oh, and he says it, by the way, like three times in this article. Just, wow. I have a
That's
problem
bad
with
editing.
That.
Yeah.
It ain't going to happen anytime soon, nor should it.
I think they already did. I bet the military has already done like three of these.
Get them ready for warfare.
Yeah. They're tougher than we are, you know? And they don't have the idea that it might be wrong what they're doing because they're
The church had their say on it. And,
really, someone asked the church.
Well, went that far.
Someone asked the church, and then they're like, "Still, cloning carries so much mystery and Hollywood glamour."
That's what the church said.
No, the church said made their comment about it. You know,
and then. We don't know what the comment is. I'm guessing their comment is science, no.
Yeah, basically. But they're talking about movies such as Jurassic Park and Boys from Brazil and Never Let Me Go. And they talk about those movies and like them glamorizing this.
The moral of Jurassic Park is those things were selected for extinction. You cannot bring them back without reaping negative consequences.
That Geico sitcom flopped as well. No one
really watched Neanderthals. Yeah, no one even wants to see Neanderthals on TV. They're not entertaining.
The last Neanderthal you wanted to see, we saw, was Encino Man. And that was, you think Brendan Fraser, they're going to come out looking like Brendan Fraser. And like,
that's going to happen. Now we need to talk about that. But I don't think it's going to be like that. I think it's going to be like those fools on the
whatever
Geico.
It was called, bro.
Yeah. Yeah. Who have a chip on their shoulder. I'm like, you should be lucky to be alive. Tens of years in the future from where you should be.
Stop complaining. And then
Plus
they ask
cheap
about
car insurance.
Yeah, the reasons why. Why? Because there's no obvious reason to do it.
That's never stopped anybody.
No,
there's no pressing need or remarkable benefit to undertaking such a project. It best might shed some light on biology and behavior of a distant ancestor. Mm-hmm. At worst, it would be nothing more than the ultimate reality television show exploitation.
Oh, I'm sorry. We're concerned about exploiting them.
Right.
Like, they're going to care.
Yeah. You know, an octomom-like surrogate raises a caveman child. Tune in next week to see what her new boyfriend thinks when she tells him there's a tiny addition in her life and he carries a small club.
When it rips its way out of her vagina. Because that's what I imagine that baby would do. Like, he's not going
to
be happy
That's
about
what you're saying. Like, the downside of trying to clone a Neanderthal is there's a good chance of killing it or producing a baby that's seriously deformed. Producing a baby that lacks immunity to infectious diseases, and foods that gotten used to, an inability.
They probably are not going to be into TCBY and McDonald's and all that kind of stuff.
They're
going to want raw meat from you. We're going to find out something. I think if we bring these guys back, we're going to find out that they got a taste for meat.
Right.
You know what I mean? And they're just going to wreak havoc all over the place. You're going to have a race of very angry and confused, somewhat cold.
Right. And they say
foolish
men. Right. The inability to know what environment to create to permit the child to flourish, and a complete lack of understanding of what sort of behavior is normal or appropriate.
We don't even know this for kids today, based on what I see. Right. How are we going to do it for a Neanderthal?
Yeah. So then he goes on, you know, maybe you could justify it with resurrecting a woolly mammoth or a mastodon or a dodo bird or any of these other extinct animals, but even then, you don't know what they're going to eat, where they're going to go, what they're going to do to the ecosystem.
Yeah, we know what the mastodon's going to do. It's going to just run all over the place.
Yeah.
Like the elephants we have now are trampling all over people. Like there's, you know, like there's no tomorrow. They can't wait to trample on a village.
How dare they?
Yeah. A mastodon. Like the band.
Zoos will be lining up.
Yeah. I think people are going to eat it. I think that for like something like a mastodon, it's going to be on the menu like right away.
Yeah.
Right away.
Oh, right. And make an outfit out of the hair.
Look at the buffalo. They were running around about bison. We got to have more bison. We got to have more buffalo. And now they're on plates everywhere across America.
Right. It wouldn't be used as a genuine food solution. It'd be a high-end.
Yeah, it's a high-end food. We can't just go to McDonald's and get like a bison burger. That's what it's going to be, mastodon burger.
Burger King might be interested in that.
Possibly. They don't even use meat, though, half the time.
Yeah. There's another, he goes on to say, he's talking about ginning up more things. And he uses the term ginning up. I think that
he's a science reporter.
He is.
I want to see it whip up.
I have his pages of credentials, and he is out of control, like smart. But nobody checked. Nobody dared. I guess.
He obviously does not know his way around a thesaurus.
Yeah, he says.
Gin up.
You can gin up microbes, do things we really need, such as make clean fuel, suck up carbon dioxide, clean fat out of our arteries,
or make a mastodon.
But, you know, why would you mess around with microbes
and then
release them on humanity?
Right.
I don't think, as women, I don't know if we can understand that. Because it seems like all these gin up, like, I know how to gin up something. You know, like if I want to create something, I have other ways of doing it.
Yeah.
This is, it's always some frustrated scientist who's like, I got to make life.
Doing something to the extreme degree.
Yeah. Think that we don't need that right now. I mean, this, I guess it comes down to if they've seen Jurassic Park, one, skip two, go to three. You see how things are going to turn out. I want to hit you with this. Just a little side note about this tech ginning up thing.
Yeah.
We talked about 3D printers a little bit last time.
Oh, sure.
They now are experimenting with printing up like DNA. And eventually, they did a heart. They're going to print us up pretty soon. You better be careful. We're not getting scanned when we walk around. Like when you go to the airport the next time, they could be scanning you and you come out the other side. They printed you up already.
That would be rude.
Extra Katie Casmiris.
First of all, who needs it?
You know what? These guys do. The same guy who wants a mastodon wants an extra Katie.
I can't imagine. Like there's, and then they have the nerve to put in this little image of this woman saying, woman pays $50,000 to clone dog. And she looks like a very sad white woman. Like,
you hang around me too much.
Just like, oh, petting her clone dog, I guess. And I guess these are the people that are going to be wanting things like this.
I think that people are not going to want.
We saw Pet Sematary as
well. Yeah,
that didn't turn out well.
You know, watch Hollywood. I think people are going to start like cloning things that they definitely have had in the past.
Yeah.
Like even with this 3D printing, like I'm probably going to go try to print a shoe. I can buy a shoe anywhere.
But you want to,
I don't know what else to, you know, I don't have the foresight to think about something futuristic I might want printed. I'm just going to print stuff we have, like Mike's hard, I'll print that.
But at the end of the day, it's always interesting, like, if you think of the lowest common denominator, that's how this technology will ultimately be used. It's like I saw the 3D printers are now making, you can get casts of your own penis.
Your penis, they're doing it right down the street.
And I'm sure pornographers will find a way to clone things that need to be cloned for their market as well.
Oh, yeah. Like bits and pieces.
Bits and pieces or
boobs are going right in there, like you said last time.
Deceased porn stars.
Yeah, whatever. Right. It's never for the best and highest use.
Oh, no, it'll get to the gutter soon enough.
Yeah.
We'll find
immediately, because that's the only way you can make money.
Yeah.
How many people want a mastodon versus their old, you know, Scruffy, their old dog?
Yeah, or an old girlfriend or boyfriend.
Yeah. Body parts and this kind of thing. I thought it was funny that they wanted to print up penises because I'm like, we got plenty of penises, and you know what I mean. Like,
how many more molds and images? Like, how many?
But
do
when
you
I'm
need
away to... from home, you can have my penis.
That's what they're saying. You know what? This Valentine's Day, I better not hear about anybody getting a penis. I don't want to hear about that. I just don't.
You're listening to Hey You Know It with Jaquetta Sotmari and
Katie Casmir.
We're telling you how it is and how it should be.
Yeah. Well, speaking of penises, I have a little thing here from the Wall Street Journal, which I refer to as my onion.
Yes.
It says, the title is Foot Long.
Okay.
That's my segue to the penis thing. Subway makes lengthy argument. So apparently, Subway is trying to stop other people who have bodegas and delis from using the term footlong to describe any items.
Oh, come on.
Now, here's a question to you guys. So, because obviously, from in Australia, we have Subway, but we don't have the whole culture of hoagies. And so would the word footlong have been used here for decades and decades? Or
Everybody uses
footlong. Right. Okay. Footlong hot dog.
Of course.
A footlong sub.
Yeah.
Sure.
And by, just to be clear, by the way, a hoagie is a legitimate and very tasty sandwich. What's coming out of Subway, I think, is none of those
nasty.
Things.
Sure, not it.
Like a hoagie, you should be straining to get your mouth around. Right. Even just a corner.
It should be nice, like Italian bread or French
there
bread.
There should be some seasoning on it. Right. You know. Someone named Joey should have helped you with that sandwich in some way. Like, I used to love getting hoagies. Subway is a poor substitute for them.
Yeah.
So anyway, they're trying to stop people. It says here, in 2011, Subway sent a cease and desist letter to Casey's General Store demanding that it stop using the word footlong to describe their 12-inch sandwiches. They argue that the proper inquiry is not whether footlong is descriptive of a food item, but whether you can use it to talk about services if it requires imagination. So they're saying that they don't want it. They've been trying to trademark footlong as a term. The humorous thing for me about this is that they just had a lawsuit against them recently because their footlongs ain't footlong.
Right.
Ha ha.
Did you hear about
that? No, I didn't hear about that.
And
but
the people who run the Subway, like the, you know, the franchisees, they're like, we don't, please stop saying footlong. They're not a footlong.
Right.
Someone went out and got a bunch of them and measured them. They're like 10 inches, 11 inches.
I guess it started out in Australia and then these guys in Jersey
picked up on it
and started the lawsuit here.
I think it's incredible that you the balls to go out there and call something footlong, and that's your big your big thing is footlong.
Do you hear what Subway's big excuse was? Was that during the toasting process, it shrinks a little bit.
Oh, like a pair of jeans.
Right. Just going through the wash.
But then make it a foot and 2 inches long. Exactly, so you have some shrinkage on either side. Like, the most I've ever gotten at Subway sandwiches is the half sandwich.
Okay.
That's not half a foot long.
No.
It's like a slider, basically.
Yeah. Right.
So that's Subway's footlong thing. They apparently they're being fought on this because other people want to be able to use the word footlong to describe, the food
anything.
That they're selling.
Yeah,
as you said, all those
anything.
Ballpark footlong hot dogs and things.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah. And they also sold, there's a place that sells pizza by the inch.
Oh,
really?
Okay.
Where's that?
Yeah. I don't.
How many inches of pizza do you think would be appropriate?
It's like a rectangle, and then cut it
for
in
like parties.
Yeah,
I got it. Pizza by the inch.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So if I want a foot of pizza, give me a foot long.
That
of pizza.
Sounds terrible. I get 3 feet of pizza, or is it 3 foot? I like it when people say when it's multiple feet, but they say foot in it. I have 5 foot of pizza.
Yeah.
Knowing what measurement and amount of pizza I could get, I think add significantly the amount of self-loathing I'll have after.
Yes.
Oh, wow, I had 3 feet.
Man, I just
feet.
Ate, well, for you, I just ate a meter of pizza.
Right.
Yeah, right.
I had 28 centimeters of pizza, and I am stuffed.
Okay, this segment is called Discount Celebrity. This is where we have your A-list celebrity, but times are tough, and you may not have the budget for said A-lister. So we did the work for you, and we're going to offer you our B, C, D lister to take their place.
I'm going to try to perform Discount Celebrity today. I have two lovely ladies.
All right.
We usually have gentlemen on the Discount Celebrity because there's just more of them.
Yeah.
But I found these two ladies. One is Rachel Griffiths.
Do you know who that is?
Yes, the Aussie actress.
Yes, she is Australian. In honor of our guest, I picked one of his country people.
Well, good. Now you all right. Yeah. I don't know.
You'll know her when you'll come to know her and to love her through this segment. So Rachel Griffiths, who was born in Melbourne in 1968, so she's a young lady like ourselves.
That's all right.
And she is 5'9½" or 1.77 meters.
Oh.
Yeah. So her mother is an art consultant, and her uncle is a Jesuit priest. No mention of anybody else. She's got some brothers, a ski instructor, but let's just cut to the chase. You will know her from Muriel's Wedding.
Oh!
She was Muriel's best friend.
Muriel's best friend with Toni Collette. Right?
Okay,
got it. She's most known in the United States for being the crazy character on 6 Feet Under, Brenda Chenoweth.
Okay.
Did you ever watch that show?
No.
A little bit, but yeah.
And she was also in Hillary and Jackie.
Okay.
Which I don't know if you saw
I didn't
that.
See that either, see but that I know Muriel's Wedding, so I know.
Yep.
So we can stop.
Okay. So basically she was an unknown when she was in the film Muriel's Wedding in 1994. I remember I went to see that when I was in England, and I loved it. I thought it was amazing. It was kind of an independent feel to it, but it was a really great film. I thought the acting was amazing, and Toni Collette obviously was very amazing.
But this isn't about Toni Collette.
Yeah. Okay. This is about Rachel Griffiths. So the reason why I picked her and the woman who is I'm going to put her up against is because she seemed like she's a little crazy to me. Like all
Ooh,
the
what
roles
do you think?
That she
Does
plays
she
are a little
is
out
that
there.
One?
I think she always seems normal in interviews, but you're right in that she picks kind of left
borderline,
field characters.
Yeah,
quirky, kind of, yeah.
So after Muriel's Wedding in 1997, she was the subject of some great controversy when they opened up the Crown Casino in Melbourne. Apparently there was a protest against this casino. I don't know if you remember this. And she showed up butt naked and ran around to try to get
the press
to pay attention.
Wow. You didn't hear that, but you knew about the protest?
No, I just gambled there.
Oh, okay.
You supported it. Right. You're on the other side of this issue. She said she was inspired by Lady Godiva.
Huh.
Who, you know, stopped in many a casino.
You know, of
right,
course.
Right.
But she didn't have the hair. Bag.
Yeah, she didn't have any hair.
Which is like...
She just ran
that
free.
That's a key component to Lady Godiva, by the way.
Right.
Yeah, and
you didn't really
was
gonna quite pull it off without them.
No photography. Yeah. So it was like you saw it and then it was over. It was just a piece of legend. She was also in a British film called My Son the Fanatic, where she plays a prostitute who becomes involved with an older, considerably older Pakistani man. She was in Blow opposite Johnny Depp and Ray Liotta. She played the mother.
Oh, she did too.
Yeah.
All right.
And the makeup was amazing.
Right.
Like she's a really beautiful woman, but she really gets into the character, whatever she's doing. Then she was on 6 Feet Under. And now she's on a show called Brothers and Sisters.
Yeah.
With Sally Field.
Oh, I've
seen
her. Yes, I've
Calista
seen
Flockhart, Balthazar Getty, and Matthew Rhys.
Balthazar.
Yeah. Have you seen the show?
No.
Have you seen it?
Soap opera, I think.
Yeah, I don't watch 1 hour long shows that are dramatic, unless there's zombies involved.
Okay.
So I'm not really into it.
So like what, I said, what is she doing?
What
is
right she now, to? What she has coming up.
Is that show still around, that one with Sally Field?
Yeah, it's still it's on right now. None of us have seen it. So, I mean, how good could it be? So she has coming up in 2013 a drama called Mr. Banks. An author travels from London to Hollywood as Walt Disney Pictures adapts her novel, Mary Poppins, for the big screen. Yeah, we talked about this before. This is with Emma Thompson, Tom Hanks, Colin Farrell, Paul Giamatti, Jason Schwartzman, and BJ Novak from The Office.
Yeah. Oh.
Of all people.
Weird. Yeah, but we like Colin Farrell.
We do like Colin Farrell.
Yeah, we decided.
Who was his discount? Do you remember?
Can't offhand. Okay. But we like Colin Farrell.
We like Colin Farrell.
He's good.
Yeah. Then also she was in 2012, so last year, Underground, the Julian Assange story, the WikiLeaks guy, and she was a star in that. Never heard of it.
No.
So that is Rachel Griffiths. That's what All she
right,
has
so
coming
this
up.
Is, she's our A?
No, she is not the A. She is, I'm giving her the
Why
C.
See, she always fools me with this.
The A-lister is Juliette Lewis.
Oh, okay.
And it was interesting because the more research I did, the more I found that people said they look alike.
Yeah.
And when I looked at their most recent photographs, they look like they're twins.
Almost. Yeah.
It's kind of weird. I never would have thought it before. Juliette Lewis is born in 1973. She is 5'6", or 1.68 meters.
Okay.
She's from Los Angeles, California. And it has her occupation as actress/musician. We're going to get into it.
Trouble brewing.
Yeah.
Right. I wonder what kind of gig she's had.
So she's always been a wild child. She started driving when she was 14 and drove without a license until she was 21. She just didn't give an F. That's how she put it out there. She was buck the system. She was on The Wonder Years as Wayne's girlfriend. She was in National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Whose girlfriend?
Wayne. Wasn't that his neighbor or something?
I don't know.
She also got a big ups. Speaking of... Who says big ups? That's a rap thing, right? Big ups. She got mad props, son, for being in Cape Fear, which I'm sure
that was
breakout performance.
Yeah.
She was in Husbands and Wives, Romeo is Bleeding, What's Eating Gilbert Grape, but I like her.
Oh, that's right.
My favorite role of hers is in Natural Born Killers.
Oh.
I thought she was amazing in that.
That's probably still her biggest role.
Yeah, and she did some of the music for that.
Oh, okay.
She's gone on to be in Hysterical Blindness. She's been in some music videos. She does... She was in Grand Theft Auto 4. She provides a voice for that.
Oh, right. She was in the video Come to My Window, the Melissa Etheridge.
Yeah, she was acting crazy in that.
And also, I liked her in From Dusk Till Dawn.
Yeah, she's good.
Yes, she was in that as
her
well.
Her characters are always a little bit on the edge.
Yeah.
Now, it says actor/singer because in 2009, she formed a rock band called Juliet and the Licks.
Well,
and she's been,
she told us.
She's been doing that for quite some time.
All right.
She's done her share of like TV performances and all that kind of stuff. She's been on My Name is Earl, little bits here and there. So that's pretty much Juliette Lewis.
You're making us nervous, by the way. You're losing all your papers.
Oh, don't worry about it.
And I'm like, we're ready to...
Because we usually try to keep everything together. And then I'm like, why? Who cares?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'll just cut this part out. So she... She has coming up in 2012, she was in Open Road with Juliette Lewis as a star. Angie, a young Brazilian artist, abandons her old life and goes on a journey around the world with Andy Garcia. That's sketchy.
Andy Garcia.
Huh. Yeah.
He's been absent for a little while, too.
Yeah. She was also in The Firm, which is a TV series that's on right now with Josh Lucas and two Canadian actors that I love, Callum Keith Rennie, who is newbie in Twitch City, and he was also the really, really creepy, one of the creepy male Cylons in BSG, and Molly Parker, who played a rabbi on Northern Exposure, and she's just a really amazing artist. Much more interesting, I guess, than Juliette Lewis, because I'm spending time on them.
Yeah.
In 2013, she's going to be in Osage County. Weston family overcomes differences with an alcoholic patriarch
who goes missing.
The play.
Right.
That just closed, didn't it, on Broadway?
I saw that, actually, like a year or two ago.
August, Osage County. It was really good. That's with Ewan McGregor, Meryl Streep, someone called Benedict Cumberbatch.
Nice name.
That's a great name.
Yes.
That's a Twitter handle if I ever
And then if you keep going down the list, Juliette Lewis.
That's not fair.
I know it's not fair.
Melanie's career might be doing a bit better than hers, right?
Melanie Griffiths, yeah.
No, not Melanie, excuse me.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry.
Rachel Griffiths.
Rachel Griffiths.
Sorry, Rachel. Melanie. Sorry, Melanie. So I picked these two women because, well, first of all, one's Australian. They look alike. I think they're very picky about the roles that they take. They don't work a lot, but when they do something, it's quality work. And they're both kind of in the foray in the TV. Mm-hmm. However, I'm giving Juliette Lewis the A-list position because she's just got more going on. I mean, Meryl Streep. If I was in a film with Meryl Streep,
I think that the other
Griffiths was.
Well, now that I know who she is, now that I know, and as you said, I've grown to love her during this.
See,
I think that she has more depth.
Okay.
Not saying that Juliette Lewis doesn't have depth, but okay. I think she has more because she's hit a range of characters that are a little more intense and more three dimensional.
But what about the printer. Heat? The heat coming off of both of them in terms of Hollywood. So if we're making a film, who do you think is going to be more expensive?
Well, you know, I don't know. I'd be curious to know that because I think that Rachel Griffith probably has a slightly higher, I was about to say Melanie again, has possibly a slightly higher profile as an actress these days. But mm-hmm. but the tabloids and so on would definitely, they always were fascinated with who Juliette was dating.
Yeah, she was just on RuPaul's Drag Race.
Right,
like
right.
That.
Oh, yeah, that's she right. She
Brad
did it for
and
a while.
Did she appear half naked to a few award shows and things like that? And
there's nudity on both ends.
Yeah. Right, right.
So I appreciate what both of you guys are saying, and that's why I feel comfortable saying that they are interchangeable.
Absolutely, they are.
So it's a 50-50.
It's a 50-50.
I think so.
You can get one or the other at the same pretty low price.
And one's a musician.
Yeah, one's a musician. They'll both take their tops off and run around like crazy people.
Yeah.
So that's our discount celebrity for today. It's tough out there.
Yeah.
They're both pretty cheap, though.
Yeah, so we just gave you another option, everyone. Yeah. You're welcome.
Yeah, congratulations. Thank you very much.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Well done.
I see something very interesting here.
Here is a thing that I saw in the news, and it's called mantyhose.
Mantyhose.
You need to work.
Pantyhose for men. And I have an image, and basically it's an image of a man and a woman. They don't show their faces, but
Because he's embarrassed.
Yeah, right. Each one is wearing a pair of pantyhose with patterns.
And they look like a harlequin.
Harlequin,
kind of situation.
Yeah. And it says here, Women's Wear Daily reports today that there has been recent success of mantyhose.
Mm-hmm. And by recent success, I mean like two dudes accidentally bought them.
Yeah. Like men's tights can also be referred to as guylons or brosery.
Oh, gosh. That's horrible.
Brosery. This is comedians, right? I miss my calling. I should have been working for Women's Wear friggin' daily.
Yeah. So there was a big boost in sales because of this article. And apparently in Europe,
Eurotrash should be on it for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, they rose 30% after this article. And these men are buying a mantyhose.
So one more pair was purchased. That's up 30%.
I have a question. Given the elaborate design, I'm assuming they're meant to be worn alone. There's no kilt covering these or anything, right?
No. Actually, what it is that...
Yeah, this is a legitimate question.
It's definitely become a trend for men in Europe. They're fun to wear. You can see the colors and patterns standing out from their shoes. They wear tights with shorts, under jeans that have holes in them, and underpants to stay warm in colder climates, or just to lounge around.
Okay, let's debrief. We have a man here in the studio today.
That's why I brought this in. I was like, you're a man. You've been around and about the world.
People.
Yeah,
that would be. I mean, my first concern is the junk. This seems like it would be very uncomfortable.
There's no opening in the fly area.
Oh, well,
but is there extra room in the junk area?
There is flexible waistbands and extra sweat-wicking capabilities.
But no room for junk.
See, they don't talk about that.
That's important.
Even long johns will give you a little bit of room for junk and a hole so you can at least go to the bathroom without issue. That sounds a little impractical.
If you're cold as a man, you have the option of wearing... Right. Long johns.
When I was living in Maine, I'd occasionally throw the long johns on under my jeans.
Or union suit or, you know, this kind of thing. But mantyhose?
Mantyhose.
Brosery. And what was the other one? Guylons?
Guylons.
I remember when I was in New Orleans with my mom when I was 12 years old, I saw a pair of guylons for drag queens. Yeah. And they did have a third leg area.
Right. So what do you think? I mean, like, you think, like, European guys, sure. But
Australian men, not so much.
I'm not sure to go all that well with the, you know, I mean, Australian men like to sort of wrap themselves up in the sort of tough guy sort of.
Like that's like generally, a lot of them are tough guys, right?
But I'm talking about fashion forwardness.
I mean, I think there'd be probably a limited market in Australia. I mean, there's no doubt that, I guess, the, you know, as you said, that the
transvestites already have these products for themselves, and there's room for junk in them, is what I'm saying.
Dudes, you know? U.S. dudes might want them because now they're going to be slimming. Don't
if
you think?
I see one more super slim guy in skinny jeans, I'm going to hurt somebody. It looks so uncomfortable. You know what I mean?
Plus, if they're just peeking out through jeans, it makes for a really awkward conversation at the end of the night if you happen to meet someone and...
And you go back?
Right.
Yeah.
What happens?
Excuse me, are you wearing guylons?
You go back to someone's house, the guy's taking, you know, you're having a good time, you get the pants off, and you're like, hey.
Yeah.
A pair of tights?
It's going to be a couple more minutes. I've got to get these off.
Well, I talked to a very well-established designer who years ago had her own company where they manufactured socks and tights.
How did he or she feel about this?
She felt, I said, you know, back in the day during that time, I mean, did you ever try to launch something like this? I'm talking like a major. This is a major. And
huge.
And she was laughing. She said, no, there was no interest except for one customer who went like fishing or hunting in Maine and said that he would use the tight sometimes to keep warm.
Oh, okay. Right.
And that's it. That's
but
the only news. But it wasn't like
special. He was just wearing regular women's tights.
Right. And that's it. But he wasn't. It wasn't one guy's not enough for a market.
No, absolutely. And he wasn't doing this for fashion. He was doing this so he wouldn't freeze his ass off.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine these are going to sell big in the sort of the hunting stores and so on for all the.
Well, you know what? Maybe they should consider a camo option.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe you're like, you know, for weekend warriors when you're pretending to go out and be.
But I would think that I grew up in the country. We do be outside and all this kind of stuff. Long johns is fine because sometimes you need your feet to be free.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I would argue that if they really want to sell a lot more, that having a hole would be really handy.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. There we go.
Definitely. So that's a man's viewpoint on brosery.
That's my feedback.
Yes. An opening in the fly area is what is needed.
I'm just thinking a lot of guys don't like to be that constricted in that area.
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
And tights, we know from ladies wearing tights, sometimes it's even uncomfortable for us.
Yeah.
You know, sure. Not to mention unhealthy.
Right.
It's the last thing you need is from under. You know,
they seem a little bit unnecessary. They remind me of the popularity. It was like 3-4 years ago. There was a company in Australia that was making a lot of money with fake tattoo sleeves. They were skin colored.
Oh right.
And they started making them on kids' shirts. They would be stitched into the edges of the sleeves.
Like a nylon.
It was like a nylon, and but it would have so that your 2-year-old could look like they had a full. Full sleeve or a quarter sleeve.
Because he doesn't want to go to preschool looking soft.
Right.
You know, he wants to be, you know, a la mode with the other kids.
To establish what's going on.
I love in the picture that the guy is just trying to model it casually. There's no way to casually wear some manty hose. This goes, I feel bad because all of these things that they're adapting.
And she wants
from,
to get away from him. Look at it. Like the model in the picture, her body posture is like,
off.
She's like leaning away instead of like leaning into the guy.
What I don't like about, it's like with the myrtle. Remember the men's girdle?
Yeah.
Man, be comfortable. Don't fall into the trap that women have fallen into. Pretty soon you're going to have corsets. You're going to be, there's already makeup for men. Like, you look fine.
The whalebone stitching at the back.
Yeah.
What about musicians? What are your experience? Would you guys done some of these?
Well, that's interesting. I'll tell you, glam rock bands would definitely have an interest in that. But unfortunately, they were at their height in 1986.
Yeah.
A time machine is necessary for this.
Right.
Axl Rose. It maybe if they... I would take
Freddie
it
Mercury
if they laced up in the front.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Maybe a cod piece.
Right.
You know,
nice.
Something.
The funny thing is that now that you say it, though, I do have memories of Freddie Mercury prancing about on the stage in a couple of tight leotards and so on. He used to love those.
But that's... Mm.
But again,
they didn't need to be called mantyhose. Right. It was just leotards.
Stagecraft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He wasn't like walking around normally like that. Like, he would just be wearing jeans and,
right. He
you
was
know,
wearing
sweatshirt.
It for the performance.
Yeah. Very interesting. David Bowie, for
Bowie,
example.
Definitely, yeah.
He would be into
it. Yeah,
very small market, though.
Small market. Theater, maybe music and...
A little Shakespeare action. But that already exists. Ren fairs.
And the guy up in Maine or Minnesota whose regular pair of long johns are dirty.
Right.
Cool. Awesome.
Gee, Larry.
Yeah.
Haven't done the wash yet?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
That's why I have these on. Thanks so much for coming in. This was wonderful.
Oh, no
Thanks
problem,
for sharing your stories
really great.
And contributing. And it was fun having you in the studio.
Thank you for having me. It was great to chat.
Cool.
Appreciate it.
Okay. So thank you for listening to Hey You Know It. Send us an email at heyyouknowit@gmail.com. Go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. If you do, you will get a Hey You Know It shot glass from us, free of charge. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Tumblr. And thanks again for listening. Bye-bye.
Thanks. And then the other cassette tape that I bought was Cyndi Lauper. She's so nice. Unusual. That was it. Which had a song about beating off, and I didn't realize it until years later.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
no.
Nobody knew. And then it came out, and everyone's like,
if they hadn't said anything, no one would have known.
No.
Who uses bop as a term?
Right, right.